This is Nancy Dwyer
and Rocky Alvey
for Stellar Conversations, recorded at Vanderbilt University's Dyer Observatory.
I'm Rick Chappell, the director of the Vanderbilt Dyer Observatory, and I have the pleasure today of having a conversation, a stellar conversation, with Dr. Jan Davis, who is a former NASA employee, former NASA astronaut, engineer, scientist, manager, lots and lots of things in space exploration. And Jan, it's great to have you here.
Thank you. Chatting. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. It would be interesting to know in your life when you first got interested in science and engineering. When did you know, what things started to happen, at what point in your life when you realized that was something you wanted to pursue?
Well, I was fortunate enough to grow up in Huntsville, Alabama in the 60s when we were going back to the moon. And Huntsville played a crucial part in testing the engines that were going to be on the Saturn V rocket. And I remember as a young girl when we tested one of those rockets, and it would just shake the whole town. Literally, your windows would vibrate, and everybody knew that we were testing an engine, and we're all excited because we're going back to the moon, or going to the moon, and people were just glad to be a part of that. Huntsville was glad to be a part of going to the moon. Mm-hmm. And I was also fortunate in that I had a great science teacher when I was at that sort of transitional age, you know, fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, when you sort of become interested in one thing or another. And he just made it fun and very interesting. And so science was my favorite subject. And close behind that was math. I just loved math. I loved doing problems, and it's just something I enjoyed. And so I don't know when I decided I wanted to go in engineering, but I knew I wanted to be part of the space program and in some way apply science and math in that area.
Mm-hmm. So you went to Georgia Tech and did a degree in applied biology?
I had a major in biology and a minor in engineering mechanics. It was a bioengineering degree, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And then a mechanical engineering degree from Auburn, and then PhD from University of Alabama, Huntsville. So I was combining the science and the engineering all along. You know, later on in graduate school, it was more materials engineering, so I was still combining the science and engineering.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What's the what was it like in engineering as a woman? Those were earlier years in which today, I'm happy to say, it seems to be much more balanced in terms of men and women in science and engineering, but those were different days then. What was that like?
Well, it was kind of weird because I was usually the only woman in the class when I was going through engineering school. So all eyes were on the women who were in engineering, so you'd better do well, you know, because everybody knew how you were doing. But in the workforce, when I went to work for NASA, it was the late 70s when we were getting ready to fly the space shuttle. And most of the people there were from the Apollo era. You know, they had not hired any people right out of college in about 10 years. So not only was I female, but I was younger than most of the other people there. And I would say I think I had to prove myself that I could do it, you know, that I could do engineering, because they weren't used to working with women at all.
Mm-hmm.
But once they knew that I could do it, they just supported me all the way and were just great to work with. So I didn't have any problems at all. You know, they gave me every opportunity available. I had great work. I worked on Hubble Space Telescope, my first job at NASA, which was just a wonderful experience. So I've been very fortunate with the people I've worked with. It's been very pleasant. And I think engineering is a great career for women because you can do just about anything in engineering. You know, you can design all kinds of things. You can help people. There's just a lot of different things you can do. And so I hope I can encourage more women to go into engineering.
Absolutely. So there probably, when you came to Marshall, maybe there were 3,000 employees or something, or 2,500.
Right.
There probably weren't more than a dozen women in engineering.
I think that's right. Just a handful.
Wow.
Yeah. There was one other woman in my whole building, and I had one of the biggest buildings on site.
Mm-hmm. But it's good. It was encouraging even then.
Oh, yes, it was.
I think even though it was a change in all circumstances, in private industry or government or anything else, mm-hmm. for what had been entirely men, it was a change. But I certainly felt in NASA that the excitement was about the things that we were all trying to do, mm-hmm. and people's talents were what mattered, and much less than the gender thing in science and engineering.
It was a team effort, and everybody had to do their job, and they expected you to do your job and be a team member, and we had great things to do, great missions, and we were all passionate about it. Every one of us who was working at NASA chose that over a lot of other things we could have done because we were passionate about space exploration.
Mm-hmm. So there, you were involved in engineering on a number of different things, very important things. And what happened? How did you get interested in spaceflight for yourself? What was that sequence of experiences?
Well, I went to work for NASA in 79, and the first women to be selected for astronauts were in the 1978 class, and then there was another class in 80 that had women in it. Ray Seddon was actually in the 78 class, mm-hmm. and there were six women in that class, and for all of us out there who were working in the space program, we thought, man, this is possible now. We can be astronauts. You know, it was just totally different than the male test pilot days of Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo. And since I was at NASA and doing very interesting things as an engineer on Hubble Space Telescope, I thought, well, I would really like to do that. I wonder if I could do that. So I did some reading about it and what kind of backgrounds those women had, and I realized I needed to go to graduate school and get my PhD, and I became a pilot and did scuba diving and just whatever I thought might help me, mm-hmm. be selected. And I just kept trying. I didn't make it the first two times, but I made it the third time. But I think to me, being a NASA employee, it was the ultimate job. And it combined all the things I like to do, the science, the engineering, just the exploration and wonder of it all, the physical exercise, the mental challenge of having to learn all that stuff. I like learning. That's kind of my hobby, is learning. And, you know, it just seemed like the perfect job. And I was enjoying what I was doing. If I had not been selected as an astronaut, I still was happy to be doing what I was doing at NASA. So it worked out.
So you became an astronaut in 1987.
Right.
So that would have been a year or a little bit more after the Challenger accident.
Right.
What was your reaction in terms of your own career and plans what was your reaction to the Challenger accident? I mean, that was something that certainly was a different thing for Americans to think about with regard to spaceflight, because nothing like that had ever happened before. How did it affect your thinking about being an astronaut?
Well, I had interviewed to be an astronaut in 1984, which was 2 years before the accident, and I had met some of those crew members who died on Challenger. And after the accident, I was assigned to do some work on part of the redesign to get the shuttle flying again. But when I saw the accident happen that day, we all would go to a conference room and watch it at work. A lot of people asked me that, you know, that day of the accident, do you still want to be an astronaut? And I said, absolutely. My parents called me, you know, and asked if I was okay, you know, and did it shock me into not wanting to be an astronaut? And I said, no, this is something that is part of exploration, the risk that you take. And I had already accepted that risk, just like when you drive to work, you know, you're accepting the risk that you could have a car accident, or when you fly a commercial airliner somewhere, you know, some they crash. We know they crash, but that's not going to keep you from flying because the benefit largely outweighs the risk. And in order to achieve great things, you have to take risk, and sometimes that's a risk of life. And it's a service to our country also, you know, to serve in that capacity just as it is in the military. And sometimes sacrifice is the price you pay. And I think if you want to be an astronaut, you have to decide if you're willing to pay that price. And I had already decided that it was worth it, and that was something I really wanted to do, knowing full well, you know, something could happen.
So the decision really was made before Challenger, and the decision was so well thought out and such a commitment that, I mean, Challenger represented the reality of what can happen in exploration, but but not a mind-changing sort of a thing.
No.
Well, so fast forward then to the experience of spaceflight. What do you how do you think back on that now, and what do you remember that was special about those the three missions that you flew?
Well, I think the most memorable thing was to look back at the Earth from space. Certainly, we were very busy with lots of experiments and doing all the things we were trained to do, but every second we had that was a spare second, we would go look out the window, because that's something they can't train you for. You just can't imagine how beautiful the Earth is and how wonderful our eyes are to be able to capture that. Film and cameras cannot capture what our eyes can capture, and it's just magnificent. And to see the Earth go by and go around the Earth every hour and a half and see sunsets and sunrises that occur just over a period of seconds was just awesome. And so that was probably the best part of it for me, although it was all great, all doing the science and, you know, even the training I enjoyed. And I had all international missions, and I enjoyed exchanging cultures with the people I flew with who were from other countries. And so it was all just a very enjoyable experience.
It always seemed to me in NASA that the employees value the flight crews sort of at the top of the list of things that they do. And so I think you get to see a very special side of NASA people, because they, you know, they appreciate what you're doing, and they want to be around you, and they want to do their best to assure that things work out well for you.
That's true. And we're also in a position when we're on a flight crew to see how many people it takes to pull a mission together. We work with, of course, the people at Kennedy Space Center for the launch, the people in Houston who do our training and mission control, but then the other NASA centers who might have experiments, or where we go for training. We came to Huntsville a lot for training for Space Lab. And so there's a tremendous amount of teamwork and people out there who make it possible. And you kind of feel, you know, you're just the lucky one who gets to fly, and you wish all these people could fly, because so many people contribute to the space program. And it's fortunate that we, in that position, have a chance to interact with them and thank them for what they're doing and show our appreciation, because they're working hard and making that their life's work to make it possible for these successful flights.
It's a real, the people of NASA are, you know, they're just, they're sort of living their dream in whatever capacity, I think.
That's
and
right.
And there's this, I know for me, there's this feeling among the whole group of people that there's not anything you can't do. You just have to figure out how to do it.
And, absolutely.
And that's unique in a lot of aspects of life. I think that people feel that strongly and or show the dedication that they do to get to be in the exploration business. What about the challenges that NASA has now, being in a situation in which there's a very nice vision for of exploration that I think in, you know, that incorporates a lot of all the elements of what NASA does, which is really nice, but being in the challenge of having limited funds to do it with. What's your take on kind of NASA's challenges along those lines and what's likely to happen?
Well, when we were going to the moon in the 60s, we had a challenge from the president to do it within a decade, and we also had sort of a race with the Russians to get to the moon, so we had that as a motivator. And the resources were a high priority in that time frame. Now we have a war going on. We have other priorities, and I don't think that going back to the moon has as high a priority in our government and our budget as we had in the 60s. So I think we, NASA and the NASA community, need to do a better job of letting people know what we're doing and why we're going back to the moon and all the benefits that we had, not just from the flights to the moon, but the spinoffs from those technologies. Someone told me the economic return on every dollar we invested in the space program for Apollo, we returned eightfold. And we also just really had a big jump in technology for, you know, telemetry and miniaturization, like for pacemakers and computers and satellite communications. And so there are a lot of things like that that will come out of the space program's current mission to go back to the moon. So we just need to, I think, do a better job of getting the public support, because I think they really support NASA and want people in space. You know, they don't want just robotic landers, although I think those are important too. As far as what will happen, I don't know. I mean, the Senate just approved another $1 billion to the NASA budget, so hopefully the House will follow. And we really need that support to make it happen, because we're going to stop flying the shuttle in 2010, and we will not have a human presence in space except for the International Space Station, and we'll go to and from that with Russian rockets. And so there'll be a gap there of 5 years or so, and we really need to get the budget for flying in 2014, 2015, the new launch vehicles, so that we won't have a bigger gap.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's you are certainly an important role model for kids and particularly women in science and engineering. What is, speak a bit about NASA's role as through people like you to give mentoring and to give dreams and visions to the kids who are making their decisions about how they want to spend their careers?
Well, NASA, as well as other entities like Vanderbilt, you know, are doing programs to encourage kids to go into math and science and engineering. There's been a downturn in the percentage of people who go into engineering, and at the same time around the world, there's been an upturn. And so if we're not careful, we're going to lose our leadership in technology. So NASA and industry is doing a lot with teachers. They're doing a lot with Explore schools, you know, where they'll adopt schools and do programs for them, as well as reaching out to kids, especially interesting them in math and science, and hopefully the space program, you know, ultimately, but initially to make it fun. Space exploration can make math and science fun, and that's the message. And unfortunately, we don't have enough people or or money to go out and reach as many kids as we'd like to, but hopefully we can at least inspire them with this new program to go back to the moon, that maybe they'll want to be a part of that.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I know you're involved in a program connected with Sally Ride.
Mm-hmm.
You have an event tomorrow on that.
Mm-hmm.
What, say a few words about what that is, that program.
Well, Sally Ride was the first woman in space, for first American in space. And she could have done a lot of different things because she's a very famous person. But her passion is to encourage girls to go into math and science and to reach them in the fifth grade to eighth grade level, because that's typically when girls lose interest in math and science, and or it's not, they don't think it's cool, or they don't think girls ought to do that, or for whatever reason, they lose interest. And so what Sally has done is she has these festivals all across the country, Sally Ride Science Festivals, where she has workshops, you know, that are about science, not necessarily just space, but science, things that are fun to do. And these girls go to those workshops, and then they hear a keynote speaker who's usually a female astronaut. And so I'm speaking at the one in Huntsville tomorrow. But it's a great program, and it's really well done.
It's been successful.
Mm-hmm. And successful, right.
That's great. Well, we really appreciate your being here, Jan, and we appreciate all that you have done in NASA and for your country because of your efforts. And it's a real pleasure to have you at the Vanderbilt Dyer Observatory.
This is Nancy Dwyer.
And Rocky Alvey.
For Stellar Conversations, brought to you by Vanderbilt University's Public Affairs Department and recorded at Vanderbilt Dyer Observatory.